Hi there, and welcome to the 6th Annual Transforming Toddlerhood Conference. I'm so happy you're here with us today. I'm your host, Devin Koonsman, toddler expert and the founder of Transforming Toddlerhood. I'm on a mission to dispel the myth that toddlerhood is terrible and empower parents and caregivers to overcome the challenges of toddlerhood, nurture their little one's development, and create confidence in their parenting skills. And that's exactly what we're here to do today. And I'm so thrilled to be here with Melissa Minnie, speech and language pathologist and founder of Raising Little Talkers. Welcome, Melissa.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. Before we dive in to everything we're talking about with helping our toddlers talk and get past the frustration of learning to talk, can you just tell us a little bit more about yourself and your work?
Yeah, so as you said, I'm a speech language pathologist. I specialize in pediatrics, specifically early intervention, little ones birth to 3 years old. And I'm the founder of Raising Little Talkers, which is this amazing online platform that was birthed out of the pandemic and has just grown into this amazing community of parents who are interested in growing their babies and toddlers' communication skills from home. So my mission is to help them do that.
That is awesome. I love it. And when I like to start off asking everyone this question, what do you feel makes toddlerhood a challenging and oftentimes misunderstood developmental period, but especially when it comes to communication?
Yeah, so I would say since toddlers are often strong-willed and love to test boundaries, as we know, I find that they're often misunderstood as being manipulative. And when a child isn't talking, that's something that I often hear from parents is, their toddler's refusing to speak, they're being stubborn, they're choosing not to use their words. And something that I love to remind parents of is that when a child can talk, they will talk or they do talk. And so it's not a choice that they're making. They just don't have the skills yet. And it reminded me of a lot of the stuff that you share, actually, where it's like, if a toddler's having a tantrum, it's because they don't have the skills to regulate themselves and express themselves a different way. And I find that to be true for most of our little ones who are not able to speak yet. So yeah, I would say the same goes for talking. And then secondly, another part that's difficult is that toddlers' speech systems are still developing, and so they're difficult to understand, even though they have a lot to say, because we develop our understanding of language first before our speech system is fully developed, excuse me. So, parents might have unrealistic expectations as to how their toddler might be sounding or supposed to sound, or what sounds they should have or shouldn't have, and not be able to understand them for that reason as well. So, kind of double faceted there.
Yeah, it's like a double whammy there. And I think
Yeah.
we sometimes forget that toddlers really lack life experience on top of the fact that in the first 3 years of life, more than a million neural pathways and connections are being formed every second. So there's rapid brain development, there's lack of life skills, and so there's just and life experience. And so it just comes together in so many ways that can make toddlerhood just so challenging. And when we look at it with communication, I mean, toddlers want to communicate with us, and a lot of frustration can come up as they're learning how to do that. So how do toddlers really learn language? Like what ha like is there an order things happen?
Yeah, so first of all, babies are born with the ability to distinguish speech sounds and to distinguish words in their language versus other languages. So they're really pre-wired to learn speech and language. And when babies are born, they're first learning about all the different speech sounds that you're saying. When they're about 6 to 9 months, they start to understand the meanings of the words that you're saying. So, something that I like to call the joint attention triangle is when a child is able to attend to an object and to their caregiver at the same time. Their caregiver labels the item. They're able to share that experience together and learn, okay, that's the name for this item. And this is even more powerful when it's the child's idea. It's something that they're genuinely interested in. And when a child points to something and a parent labels it, is one of the most powerful times that a child is sort of open to learning that word, when it's something that they have decided, I want to know what that is. So I'm always telling parents, when your child is pointing, you just label those things. Then next would come imitation skills. We're going to see babies imitating facial expressions and actions, and once they and speech sounds, and then when they get a little older, eventually words. And once they're imitating quite a bit, then they start to use those words spontaneously on their own to communicate.
It's so cute when that happens. I love it.
It is.
And how they, and there's a lot of really fun things about how babies and then they turn into toddlers and how they accumulate and learn language. And then there's a lot of frustrating parts about it as well. I'm wondering if you can speak a little bit to the difference between receptive language and expressive language and how that's learned, because a lot of times I'm talking to parents and caregivers, especially with my private clients, and we're talking about how to respond to certain situations. They're like, well, but my toddler can't tell me that. And so we always get into this conversation about receptive language versus expressive language. So I'd love to hear you explain a little more about that.
Sure. So receptive language is comprehension. It's what your child understands. And expressive language is what your child can express. And receptive language is actually a prerequisite for expressive language. So your child is not going to be able to say a word that they don't understand. They need to understand that, this is a bottle first before that they can say the word bottle. So receptive language develops first in children, and then once they understand the word and they know how it's used, they're hearing it repeated throughout their day in different contexts, and then they're going to start to imitate it, and then they will start to say it on their own. So we have a lot of communication frustration happening when a child is understanding so much about their environment and they have so many thoughts and feelings that they are unable to express. It's almost unfair to them. So that's where a lot of that frustration comes, because they have a lot to say and they can't say it to you. And so they melt down, because that's what their body knows how to do to hopefully try and get their wants and needs met.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is why I'm always talking to parents and caregivers about implementing different parenting tools, that even if your young toddler, 1 or 2 years old, can't always respond verbally when you're, asking them a question or just getting curious about what's happening, that's okay, because they can understand. So it's going to create connection. And that when we get into the pattern and habit of communicating this way, it becomes a habit for children as well. So when they are able to have that expressive language, then it's kind of like second nature, this way of communicating, versus, starting from scratch at that point. So that's how I usually have that conversation with people.
Yeah, absolutely. And
So, okay.
oh, no, you go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask you, looking at, because I think this is surprising to a lot of parents and caregivers, that there is so much understanding of language prior to children actually being able to tell us what they're thinking and feeling and want to express to us verbally. And I was curious if there's any big myths or misconceptions that you've noticed that parents and caregivers all have, in addition to that, in terms of toddlers learning to talk.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one I mentioned before is about toddlers being stubborn, or lazy is another one that I hear. So I always like to remind parents that's just really not the case. Children are really wanting to please you and wanting to communicate, and they have this drive, and they're not being manipulative, and they're trying their best. So like meeting them where they are and helping them grow from there is really important. Another common myth is that, oh, my child doesn't have to talk because their sibling speaks for them. This is something that I hear a ton, and it's actually been debunked. And children doesn't birth order does not actually affect a child's speech and language development in any sort of significant way where it might cause a delay. For example, there are some differences, but it wouldn't be it's not a reason for a delay. If your child is a second sibling, to be like, oh, like they're fine, it's because their brother or sister speaks for them. Another myth that is a misconception is that something I hear a lot is like, oh, don't worry, because I know somebody who their child didn't speak till they were four and they're fine. Or I was a late talker as a child, so like, don't worry about it, they're fine. And something I tell parents a lot is that even if you know somebody who was a late talker, or you yourself was a late talker, and your child is behind, that doesn't make it typical. And that's still an outlier. So I always like to compare a child to the developmental norms when trying to decide if there's a need for services or even just like looking into it. So not that a parent needs to worry. I'm never like telling parents they need to worry or freak out, but I am a big supporter of checking and seeing when maybe something is not developing on track, just checking in with a pediatrician or checking in with a speech pathologist, just to make sure. So that everybody is getting the support that they need to help their child earlier. And that's just better than waiting. So, yeah, I don't know if that was clear, but I guess the misconception would be like waiting is fine. So yeah, I would say I wouldn't wait past two, depending on what's going on.
Okay. That's super helpful. Thank you.
Yeah.
And like coming back to this idea of like the frustration that builds up when a child, whether their speech is developing on track, but you know, they have all this receptive language, but not the expressive language yet, or a child has a delay with their speech, you know, oftentimes this frustration can get labeled as bad behavior. So what would you like to tell parents and caregivers about this idea of like labeling a child as bad when they're having these meltdowns or other ways the frustration shows up?
Yeah. So when a child doesn't have the language to express what they want, they're going to let us know what they want and need in the only way they know how, which is often using their body, right? So that can look like grabbing, screaming, hurting others to get their want and need met. And so that makes it appear as though they are behaving poorly, when really that's just their skill level and they're doing the best that they can. So I really try and remind parents to give their child the benefit of the doubt that they're not trying to upset you or frustrate you or, you know, bug you. They're doing their best in that moment, and meeting them where they are and helping them through that, giving them some alternative tools, which we will talk about, I'm sure. You know, especially when a child is not talking, like words is not the only way a child can communicate effectively. We can give them some other tools to help them in that moment. Kind of on the flip side, frustration can also look like shutting down or becoming silent and unresponsive. A parent might think that a child is not listening, or if a child has a receptive language delay, they may not be able to follow directions, and so may be labeled as defiant. My child's never obeying or, you know, doing what I say, when in reality, they just can't understand and follow what you're saying clearly enough. So that's something you always say on your page that I'm always telling parents: get curious. You know, let's not jump to the conclusion that the child is behaving badly. Like, they're doing their best.
Yeah. Yes. I think like assuming that a child is doing the best with their level of development and their level of skills in that moment is probably one of the biggest gifts that we can give a child. And curiosity is our best friend when it comes to working with challenging behavior. And I think that oftentimes we forget, A, that all behavior is communication. It's communicating these feelings, emotions, wants, and needs, even if we might not think as adults looking with our fully developed logical brains, you know, that we might feel like this is not socially acceptable way to communicate it. But yet all behavior is communication. And I think we also often forget that toddlers, their really main goal every day is to get their needs met, because yes, babies rely on us 100% to meet all of their needs. And yes, toddlers, they are becoming more independent and there are some needs they can start to meet on their own, but largely they're still dependent on us to take care of them and get their needs met. So if a toddler is feeling like they don't know how to communicate to get their needs met, can you imagine the amount of distress this must bring up inside of a little one when they're desperately have a need or a want that they're trying to communicate and they don't know how to get us to understand it? I can just imagine like how stressful that must be to a little one.
Yeah, it really is. And something I hear a lot from parents is that their child is just screaming like all the time, their baby or their toddler. And I always tell them the same thing. I'm like, even though it's not the communication we want, it is communication. You know, like what's underneath the screaming? What is your child trying to achieve? How can we add language to that and help them get there a different way?
Yes. And so what would realistic expectations look like for parents and caregivers? Maybe you could talk about like the younger toddlers, like 1 to 2 years old, and then like the older toddlers, like 3 to 4 years old.
A one-year-old, I always like to tell parents what the milestones are for spoken words, because this often surprises parents. There's a range, and I will say that this is not set in stone. Every child is different and may not be on this particular path at this point, but you have to look at the big picture. So I don't want any parent to be like, like and freak out because their child isn't saying this many words. Because when I do an evaluation, I look at so much more than word count, but this is just one, a great way for like healthcare professionals and parents to kind of know like the first signs of maybe if something is going on and like to start talking to someone. But a one-year-old typically has 1 to 5 spoken words. And I do want to tell parents that a spoken word could be a little surprising. It also includes, you know, environmental sounds like, you know, a siren sound like ooh-wee, that could be considered a word if your child uses that to communicate a fire truck, or an animal sound, ruff, ruff, that would count as a word if it's being used to communicate the dog. Any word that is used independently, so it's not mimicking you, it's used consistently, so it wasn't just said one time and never again, and is used purposefully to communicate, that is the criteria that I use to determine a word. And an 18-month-old is using between 10 to 50 words to communicate. 10 would be the milestone, 50 would be the average. So anywhere in there is great. And even if your child's got like 7 and not 10, but they're at this age, 18 months, 12 months, we want to see tons of gesturing. So if your child is really expressive and communicative without words, they're letting you know what they want, whether they're gesturing, vocalizing, babbling, screaming, you know, pointing, these types of things, they're communicating. And if they only had maybe like 7 out of, you know, didn't reach 10, I would say, oh, wow, okay, well, they're understanding language, they're gesturing, they're socially engaged, they're doing all these things. So it's not like a huge concern. For older kids, older toddlers, language is growing exponentially at this time. So we're seeing around 2 years old, a 24-month-old would have between 50 and 300 words. It's a very huge range. So like you might have two kids who are on track who look very different, but they're both developmentally appropriate. And at this point, we're seeing kids able to follow two-step directions. So they're understanding a lot more language at this point in time. And three-year-olds are saying between 240 and 1,000 words. So again, exponential. And this is why I tell parents that I don't like to wait beyond 2 years old to get services or support because of the exponential growth after this point. So a child who's behind at 2 years old who maybe didn't get support is going to be so much more behind their peers than if they had gotten help earlier, because their peers are just going to take off after that age. I would say some other signs of language delay specifically would be a decrease in gestures, not imitating speech sounds, not imitating words, decrease in babbling, any sort of regression of skills. So if a child was saying words and now they're no longer saying words, or if they were smiling and making eye contact and now they're not anymore. And then also delays in receptive language would be more concerning to me than expressive language. So not understanding words, like for example, if you were like, oh, there's daddy, and your child did not turn to look at daddy. That might indicate that they aren't hearing you, but if their hearing is okay, it might indicate that they're not understanding who daddy is or not understanding the language there. So those are some things that I would look out for.
That's so helpful. Especially since we want to start looking at this from an earlier age than one might expect. And so when a toddler, even when they're on track, toddlers are going to have limited language, depending on their age, but even at three, they're still going to have limited language. What are some ways that we can just help them express their needs? What are some tools that we can use or some skills that we can teach that's going to make a difference to really help decrease that frustration with communication?
Yeah, absolutely. And I will add just one thing. Even toddlers who are on track and can express themselves, when they're dysregulated, sometimes they can't tap into those expressive language skills. And so, even if your kid is not delayed, they might not be able to use their words at certain times. And so, kind of having another, like, more tools in your toolbox to help them express themselves when they're dysregulated is really helpful. So, one of my favorite things to do is to teach sign language to kids or just gestures, but either one. This is huge because not only for children who are not either just not of the age yet where they can speak, but even for kids who are delayed and just speech is not coming along, other expressive language is not coming along, this can help them to communicate. And I want to say that, like, there are many ways to communicate. Words are not the only way. And using signs is not going to delay language at all. In fact, the research shows the opposite. So it actually facilitates speech. So when your child is not able to communicate with you using the word water, how amazing if they could look at you and tell you that they're thirsty by signing water to you, and then you can meet their need. And that might, solve a huge meltdown that might have happened because they're thirsty and you're like playing the guessing game with them. That's what I hear a lot of parents saying. They're guessing. They don't know what their child wants and their child is so frustrated. So I always like to say start with something that they can do, and if they're using gestures, adding sign language in there to get more specific can be really, really helpful. Using visuals is another strategy that I love. You can use realistic pictures that you take with your phone or stuff you find on Google Images. But a great example would be, like, let's say you rotate like five different breakfasts. You could have pictures of the items and let your child choose what they want for breakfast or give them a choice of two. And if you say, oh, do you want waffles or cereal? And your child can't answer you, you either need to have the items in front of you so that they can point, or an image so that they can let you know what they want. And these seem like really small things, but to a child who doesn't have the ability to say words, this is huge. And I like to tell parents, imagine if something happened to you that you weren't able to speak. Would you want your family members to give you a means of communicating now, which might involve sign language or pointing to pictures or something like that? Or would you want them to wait until you were able to get your speech back? And in that meantime, you had no way to express yourself. I think most people would say, okay, I'd want like a means to communicate now because it's so powerful. Another thing parents can do is limit open-ended questions. If your child has, delayed recept or excuse me, expressive language, and they're not able to use lots of words or sentences, asking them an open-ended question like, what do you want to eat? Might be difficult for them to tell you. But if you give them yes/no questions or offering choices, that is going to empower them to respond even without words. And then one other suggestion, which I know I've said this, meet your child where they are. I kind of want to just talk about that a little bit. When your child is frustrated, supporting them so that they can feel successful is really key for learning language. Because if your child is frequently melting down, they're not in a space where they're going to be able to learn in that moment. They really need to be regulated to learn language. So if you're able to teach your child a skill that they can be successful at Now you can layer the language on top of that. You're not going to be, if you're a hearing family, you're going to be signing, you're going to be saying the words with the signs. If your child's pointing to pictures, you're going to be modeling the words. So they will be learning the language, and this way they're going to be more receptive to it. And if you let them kind of just get into this red zone where they're not in a place for learning, you're really losing a lot of opportunities to connect and teach them. So that's what I mean when I say meet them where they are.
Yeah, and this is why, that in my work, a lot of parents will, I try to teach parents and caregivers alternatives to saying use your words, because if a child was able to use their words in that moment, they would use their words. And so it's about, looking at how can we either help a child calm so then they get back the use of their words, or how can we give a toddler a means of communication if they haven't acquired those words yet? And I think there's just something really cool when you have a young toddler, and like if you give them a choice and then you give them like the pictures and they point to one, like it's just, or they sign to you, like there's something so cool about like knowing that this little one who hasn't quite found the words yet to express themselves has so much to tell us. And I think there, I just always something really cool and exciting about that to me.
Yeah, it's true. You want to know what your little one's thinking about and what they find interesting or funny or, things that they want. I mean, it feels really good as a parent to be able to meet your child's needs, and when you can't, it can be really frustrating and upsetting. So, yeah, I'm all for giving them a different means of communicating. And I will add something I talk about a lot on my Instagram is when parents are saying use your words, because I find a lot of parents have told me that their pediatrician has said, if your child's not using their words, just withhold the item until they say the word. And the parent will say, this doesn't feel right to me. My child's melting down and having this huge tantrum when I use this strategy. And I often say, well, it's probably because your child's unable to say the word in that moment, and therefore that strategy is not going to be effective. So instead of withholding the item, again, meet them where they are and help them to be successful so that they can get what they need.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the ideas of
Lot of
gestures.
crazy suggestions out there.
I know that's shocking to me when you said that. No, everyone couldn't see, but my face was like, because I
Yeah,
like,
it is.
no.
It's
It
shocking.
is shocking
And
that because it's not developmentally appropriate. And
no.
especially here at Transforming Toddlerhood, we're all about what is going to be positive, effective, and developmentally appropriate, because we want to nurture development, not work against it. And
Yes.
so, and I also love gestures, and I use this a lot with parents. Especially when they're teaching a child to set boundaries with other children, especially, or a sibling, and telling them like stop or no, things like that. And like pairing this gesture with the word no or stop, I find like really empowers kids as well. And so there's a lot that can be done with gestures. And so there might be some parents watching that are like, okay, my child, they're accumulating some language and we're doing pretty well here. But what are some ways to help my child acquire more expressive language skills, or just improve their expressive language skills? Could you maybe talk about like one thing to avoid and one thing to try?
Yeah, sure. One thing I would say to try would be, this is so simple, but it's very, very impactful, is to not bombard your child with questions. As adults, we ask questions to get answers. So it's really natural that a parent would ask their child a question and hope, expect to get a response. But when your child either is not able to, for whatever reason, they're not old enough or their language is delayed, that can often cause a child to shut down or be silent. And just a disclaimer here, if your child answers questions, then keep asking them. This is really just for children who are not responding to that successfully. So what I like to tell parents to do is just to say statements instead of asking questions, because even though as adults, that doesn't seem to invite conversation, for young toddlers, it actually does, because they are learning through imitation. So they will often imitate a single word you said or the last word in a sentence that you said, especially if you are animated and you guys are having fun together. So an example of this would be, let's say you're building blocks with your child. Instead of saying, "What are you building? Is that a castle? Is that what is that? Tell me about that." And they're not able to, and they're just kind of quiet. Mimicking what they're doing, maybe adding a block and saying, "Up, up, this tower is big." You might get some imitation of the gesture, big. You might get an imitation of the action, putting a block on. You might get an imitation up or up or the word up if they can say it. Toddlers are just more likely to imitate when they're having fun and when the language you're modeling is age appropriate for them as well. And so I think that's just surprising to a lot of parents because they're like, "Oh, I just can like model some single words or some simple phrases." And yeah, your toddler might not go from like, doing this overnight, but if you're consistent with modeling these words in this simple language while you guys are playing together and you shift away from kind of rapid fire questioning, you'll find that you'll get more imitation and more spontaneous language out of it.
I love
That kind of
that.
answered both at
Yeah.
once, one thing
Yeah.
to avoid and one thing
I
to
love it. You just put them right together. But no, that's
try.
perfect. Thank you so much for that. And it makes a lot of sense. And so, there might be parents and caregivers watching that are like, "Okay, this is great. I really want to support my toddler in decreasing their communication frustration and just helping them feel empowered to get their needs met." What is one step that they can take when they're done listening that's just going to help them move the needle 1% forward and just get started on this journey?
Yeah, so I mentioned sign language before. That to me is like my number one. So something that a parent could do is to kind of think about what is your most challenging time of the day with your toddler. Where are you seeing the most meltdowns, the most communication frustration? And figure out what's one word that your child, if they were able to communicate that word, that it would make everyone's life so much easier. You can Google what the sign is for that word. And then you will just, every time you're in that scenario with your child, you're going to model the sign for them. So let's say, just as an example, your child gets so upset when they can't open something. Maybe one of their toys is difficult to use and they can't open it and they throw the toy when they have a meltdown because they can't do it. You would watch and notice when they're starting to get frustrated and you would model the sign. You would say, "Open. Open." You would repeat it, and then you can, even if your child allows you to, take their hands and do it and then open it for them. So you're teaching them what they can do in that moment when they are feeling frustrated before they hit this melting down point where they're not able to learn, right? You're following through, so you're showing them the power that they get by using that sign or that word, because you're opening it right away for them. And then over time, as you repeat this every time that this happens, your child is going to learn. For many children, it's actually easier to imitate gestures and signs than it is to imitate a spoken word. And so likely you'll see that sign first before they're able to speak open. And you can do this for any word, but I would say, just to like make it an easy step for parents, I would pick the one word and just like really hit it hard all day long, modeling in every scenario that you can for them.
Yeah. I always say, like, if you feel like a broken record when you're trying to like teach a new skill, teach a new word, then you're probably on target then, because toddlers need a lot of repetition. And so yeah, you
Yeah.
just gotta keep repeating it and then they're gonna pick it up. So
That's a, I would say, okay, that just like popped into my mind. I would feel like that's another misconception about language, is that like they'll pick things up faster, because it really does take like so much repetition. And I'll actually share a really cool strategy that kind of gets parents thinking about this. There are kind of words that we use a lot as adults when we're talking. We'll say like, there, this, it, and we won't use like the actual item name. And so I encourage parents to use the name of like the noun. Let's say you're playing ball with your child. You would say, "Throw me the ball." "Oh, look," instead of saying "it rolled over there," you would say, "the ball rolled over there." I have the ball. Let me give you the ball and see how many times you're actually saying the word ball. Your child is going to be more likely to imitate, first of all, learn the meaning of the word ball, but also imitate the word ball than if you actually just said ball once and you were saying, roll it to me. Look, it went over there. Uh-oh, where'd it go? Now you're not saying the word ball anymore. So parents need to really be conscious of like repeating a ton, and it doesn't come naturally to us because that's not how we speak to adults.
Exactly. Because when you're talking to someone who's already acquired the skills, then this would be a little odd. But, this is how we
Exactly.
think. And so, again, we have to, like I always say, we always need to remember we have little ones that have limited life experience and limited skills that they're rapidly learning. And so we got to support them in that process. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing it. And I know our time's coming to a close and you have a gift you want to offer our audience. Could you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so I'm offering a parent guide. It's a PDF with 5 steps for decreasing communication frustration at home. It's going to go over the five couple things I talked about today and a couple extras, but teaching gestures and signs, using more visuals, limiting open-ended questions, meeting your child where they are, and decreasing demands. And I think that it will be really helpful. Each page has kind of a why and a how to implement, and it will help parents get started right away with decreasing that communication frustration. Because I know that's like one of the main things that parents want help with when they're messaging me on my page is how do they bring some more peace and calm to their home and decrease that frustration that comes along with their child not being able to communicate.
That is awesome. That's so generous. Thank you so much. And is there anything else, any final thoughts you want to leave us with before we go?
I do want to say something. I want to tell parents that if your child is delayed, that it's not your fault. And that's something that I get a lot too from parents is they have this immense guilt, especially moms, that their child's delay is their fault, or when they're comparing their child to another child, that they must not be doing enough and that's why their child is delayed. So I always like to tell parents that really, it's only in extremely rare cases of like abuse and neglect that a parent would be the reason that a child's speech and language is delayed. Otherwise, that's just how their child is developing. And it's not something they did or didn't do. Some children just need more support than other children. And so I'd like to empower parents, even though you aren't the cause of the delay, you do actually have the power and hold the keys to help your child improve and progress. Because you're with them all the time, you know them the best, they're most comfortable with you. And infants and toddlers learn the best from the people that they're comfortable with through their everyday experiences. So parents really are the people to help them. And so instead of feeling like, oh, it's something I did, trying to shift that to, it's not something I did, but there is something I can do.
Thank you so much for that important reminder, important and powerful reminder. And where can everyone go to learn more?
Yeah, so on Instagram, I'm Raising Little Talkers. And also, my website is just raisinglittletalkers.com. I'm also on Facebook as Raising Little Talkers. That's kind of my name everywhere. I'm not on YouTube as of right now, but I'm hoping to be maybe by the time this is released. So maybe I will be on YouTube as well. But those are, I would say, Instagram is probably the best place to connect with me right now.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for taking the time to be here today to share all of your passion and expertise. And thanks for the work that you're doing in the world to support parents and caregivers and little ones around this exciting and challenging milestone of speech.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. And to everyone watching, we'll see you again soon. Bye.